You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, Launch Street. Tamara here, your eager podcast host. Okay, that didn't sound right. But what I was trying to say is that I so look forward to interviewing everyday innovators like you and me and then bringing their insights to you. It's so cool. I just love my job. Hey, do me a favor. If you listen, nod your head a few times, find yourself experiencing maybe an aha moment, or you hear something that you can take action on, write us a review on iTunes or whatever you're listening to. I'd so appreciate if you would do that, because the more reviews we get, the more great guests we get. It's a wonderful cycle that we all benefit from. Now, on today's podcast, let's talk about this. All right, mindset is such an important part of being an innovator, isn't it? And as you know, I always talk about and am a big proponent of working smarter, not harder, which I think in sometimes sounds easier said than done. But also in many ways, I think that's what champions and athletes do, right? They practice in a very particular way. They don't just do it okay. They don't just train something over and over again that's mediocre. They try to do it right every single time. It's a mindset of a champion. And that's why I asked Dana Cavalea onto Inside Launch Street. He is the author of Habits of a Champion. He spent 12 years with the New York Yankees organization, many of those years as a director of strength and conditioning and performance enhancement, winning a World Series in 2009 with them. What? It's amazing. And in addition, he is a recipient of the 2009 MLB Nolan Ryan Award. So this is an award given to MLB's top strength coach as voted by his peers. So throughout his career, Dana has had the opportunity to train and coach the greats like Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, and others. I mean, I don't even watch baseball, and I know those names, and I know that's impressive. All right, let's get to it.
Dana, thank you so much for joining me today. I cannot wait to dig into this concept of champions.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
All right. I've read quite a bit about you, but what's one thing we'd all be surprised to learn about you that, you know, isn't in your bio on the book?
Yeah, I think the one thing that most people are surprised by is that I live most of my life actually as an introvert. You know, I spend a lot of my time, you know, coaching where I'm out front or in front of cameras or, you know, speaking, doing keynotes and things like that. So everything I do publicly is very out there, but I value very much, you know, private time and time to myself, way under the radar. So that's something I think that surprises a lot of people when they see the public side and then they meet the personal side. It's, wait, you're a little more quiet, reserved, you know, than I thought. So,
you know what? I have to tell you, you're not alone. And in fact, I find that the more public my work makes me be, the more introverted I get.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I don't know. I've heard that as well with a lot of, you know, musicians, you know, the greats, like, you know, guys like Bruce Springsteen, same thing, you know, they do a lot of their, I guess, creative work in private. And then they obviously have to be much more public when they display it. But ultimately, you know, the creativity, and I always say the greatness is born in silence.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. So let's, I actually want to start this by getting on the same page, because I think there are words like excellence, champion, and in my world, innovation, that get thrown out a lot, but mean a lot of different things. So from your perspective, you know, in all the work you've done training so many, well, champions, what does it even mean to be a champion?
Yeah, so for me, I break down champion as you know, I distill it down to it's really doing what it is you feel you should be doing and also trusting that that is what you should be doing. And I say that because, you know, champion, you know, most people think a champion is, you know, holding the trophy over their head. And listen, that's great. If that's your goal and that's how you define that word, then yeah, that would be it. But it's really important that it's you whatever you define it as, if you are doing that, you are on pace to become that champion. So I agree with you. There's definitely a lot of buzzwords out there today. And, you know, sometimes in the marketing sense, we use these words to capture. But ultimately, for me, I try to use the book to tell a deeper story.
Do you think being a champion is everything that happens before you're holding up that trophy, and whether that trophy is a sports trophy or a promotion at work or, you know, whatever it is? Do you think it's what makes you a champion is everything before that?
100%. And, you know, having worked with, you know, on the athletic side of things for so long, we put so much work in. What people never understood was this, like for a 7 o'clock game, we show up at the field at 12 o'clock. So that's 7 hours practice and preparation. And that doesn't include what goes on after the game. So becoming a champion is the result of a day-to-day process. And actually, when you're going through that process, every single day you are becoming more of a champion. And that's the thing, is like we're so focused on end game and end goal that we forget that we could actually be winning in our process, and winning in the process is what ultimately leads you to something over the top, typically.
So you just said something as you were kind of sharing that I think is really intriguing. And you had said, you know, part of being a champion is doing what you're meant to do and doing the right things. How do you know if you're doing that? How do you know if you're even on that right track?
You know, I say it very simply, how do you feel, right? We all have this instinct. We all have this gut sense. Unfortunately, the more noise that we surround ourselves with, we hear that less and less. But ultimately, there's this I call it almost like a centering mechanism that's inside of every one of us. And we just know, hey, we feel good when we are doing this. We feel that each day that I engage in this and I'm making progress, I'm feeling better and better. And that's just this journey. It's the pursuit to something greater than just ourselves. So that is kind of how I package all of it up.
You're so right, by the way, what you said about there's so much noise that I think that's what actually forces us to get off track without realizing it, because there's just so much clutter and so much noise out there.
Yeah, and what it does is it contaminates our process, you know, because, you know, I firmly believe that each one of us, we know what it is that we want to do, where we want to go. We know what our passions are. Our passion is within us. It's not something we have to go find and chase. But ultimately, the more we surround ourselves with a lot of this kind of contaminating noise, we have to always be trying to get ourselves back to neutral, back to neutral, back to neutral. What are my own thoughts? What are my own feelings? What are my own values? You know, all of those things. What are my own preferences? And, you know, in the book, I go through my own journey where being in professional sports, being around, you know, all these high performers, high profile people, this lifestyle, you know, I started to forget what it is that I actually enjoy. What were the simple things that I enjoy and that I love? And it's kind of a journey back to yourself and redefining what being the champion really is for you.
You know, one of the things I love about kind of just sports and athletics is the lessons it teaches us in the business world too, about how to think, how to measure, how to look at progress, how to opt. I mean, there's so many great lessons out there, and you have just incredible habits in this book. So I want to get into them, and especially this first one, because it kind of goes to the comments you were just saying about noise. It seems like we're all really busy being busy. Yep. You know, like we're doing so many things, and the longer our to-do list is, obviously the more accomplished we are. And every time we check off, we get really happy, but we're working harder and harder. And it feels, I think for a lot of us, it feels like a hamster wheel, but we also have this weird thing, and particularly in the US, I think, where we gauge people's success or importance by how busy they are. And one of the habits you talk about in the book, Habits of Champion, is working smarter, not harder. What do you mean by that? And how do we get to that place? Because I do think a lot of us are working really hard, but not smart, actually.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you know, coming from somebody that spent most of his life you know, chasing in that wheel that we talk about and kind of going after this and going after that. And if I achieve this, then I'll be, you know, more fulfilled, right? When I started to see the best players, right, and even the top CEOs and executives that I work with, I noticed a very, very clear parallel between all of them. And they weren't running. They were walking through life. And that was a huge difference. For me, it was, let's go, come on, go, 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 go.
Yeah.
Push, push, push. And I realized if you're go, go, go and pushing all the time, it takes a lot of work to push all the time. Sometimes you want to be pushed. But ultimately, what I found them, they did a lot more walking than they did running. And I said, okay, let me figure this out here and let me sit back and be a spectator on this. And what I found is, you know, another buzzword that's out there now is being intentional. And these guys really were. I mean, they were very, very on top of their schedule. They were very, very on top of their time. They managed their own clock in an incredible way. They never let the outside dictate their pace. And I found that to be a really, really amazing way of being. And one of the players that I got really close with over the years was Mariano Rivera. And he's a very, very planned, calculated, and precise guy. And everything was on his speed. And even if you were crazy and working at a high speed, when you came around him, he had the ability innately to ground you out and pull you into his more of his pace. And it was pretty amazing. So ultimately, we got to be really aware of what's driving our speed. What's driving our speed? And usually, you know, it goes back to fear. It goes back to lack. It goes back to scarcity. And we feel like we got to go. I got to chase. And it almost tricks us to think that we're working so hard and being productive. But oftentimes we're not being productive. We're just in motion.
Yeah. We're just busy.
We're busy being busy, and busy oftentimes, you know, doing things that are not relevant to us actually achieving our mission, vision, and goal. So we got to be really, really aware of where we are spending our time. And, you know, when I coach athletes, when I coach executives, the one thing I do is I say, hey, let's take a look at your calendar. Let's look at how are you spending your time? Because everybody says we don't have time. I don't have time. I'm busy. I got this. I got that. And when you actually take a look at their day, they have plenty of time. I have one private equity guy that I've worked with for years, and he loves to strategize and draw charts and graphs and this and that. And I said, does this make you money? Is this where you monetize? And he goes, no, I monetize, you know, when I have meetings with investment bankers, when I have the meetings and I'm setting up those meetings. I said, then what are you doing over here? You already know the answer. You know the strategy, but it was a way that he was spending his time, really wasting his time, and it was procrastinating because he didn't want to face the rejection that he'd face maybe one every 3 to 5 calls of somebody that didn't want to have the meeting. So it's all connected.
Do you know what's really, I'm just going to put it on the table for a second, Dana, as you were telling that story, is that's totally me. And I just busted myself this morning doing that because I made a list of stuff to do. And there's like some client stuff and like podcast stuff, right? Sponsorship stuff. Yeah. But then also almost every week when I'm starting to feel uneasy about things, which as an entrepreneur, like as a business owner, it happens all the time. But yeah. I put on my list like strategy, financial review, like really?
Yeah.
Like I know it. But every week it gets on there because I'm like, oh, obviously I need to go back and start like planning and strategizing. And you just totally busted me. It's procrastination because I've done that work already.
you know what else it is? I'm going to tell you this. You know, most entrepreneurs and most people in business, again, we're conditioned with the mindset of if I'm not working, I'm falling behind. Or if I'm not working and building, somebody else is and I'm going to get passed. So this imprinted, you know, mechanism is in our, it's in our conscious and it's in our subconscious, right? So it's constantly driving us. And what that does is over time, we get tired and we get fatigued, but we will not stop working, right? So we just keep doing and doing and doing. And I personally believe this. I think people start, they do the planning and they do the strategy as a way to almost take like, to trick themselves into taking a break, but they're not actually taking a break. It's just that sort of work is less thought intensive. It's really less work. And I feel people fall into that pattern. So it's like I always say, you know, you just got to take the days off. You know, I was just on the West Coast for the past 10 days, four of which were work. The other six were just to chill. And I don't do it as often. I try to do something like that once a quarter. And I come back very hungry, very excited again. And the things that I was procrastinating and delaying on, when I get back, it's amazing how those become the first things I do.
Yeah, you know, so I started this meditation practice that's about 45 minutes long every day. And at first, when my friend presented this to me, I was like, there is no way I'm gonna have time for that. But and it kind of leads me to my next question, actually, but I go so high energy so fast all day that if I don't do that, the rest of my work is crap because I'm just not at working in a good place. I'm exhausted, actually, because my brain's always going. And it's funny how we fool ourselves into thinking that, oh, well, you know, if we have a million things to do and we're going, then we're going to move forward. But you're 100% right. Like it is amazing how much we need the recovery. Like I think you do in sports, right? You need the recovery as much in business as you do in sports.
Yeah. I mean, athletes are amazing. This is something else that I wrote about is, you know, athletes, although we're getting to the park at let's just say it's 12 o'clock and the game's at 7, you know, there's a lot of, it's like one big interval training session. So you do something, then you rest, then you do something and then you rest and then you play the game and then you rest. So you're constantly building in throughout your day a lot of time to rest and recover. And if you talk to most pro athletes, the one thing they love to do more than anything is sleep. They love
I'm with that.
they love to be in bed and they love to rest. And if you think about it, these people are required to perform at a very high level, you know, TV audience, a lot of money on the line. And what do they value the most? Rest. How do you interfere with the focus of a professional athlete? Don't let them rest. Mm-hmm. And we see that sometimes when we participate in certain types of travel where we have a night game followed by a day game and we have to fly, things like that. That interrupts the cycle of rest and the player feels very fatigued and emotionally a little bit unstable. And you have to play sports. You need to be very grounded. You need to be very present. And you need to be in the moment. And ultimately, you know, we hear this a lot in the business world and some of the wellness programs that are out there. We hear these words, but ultimately the cultures that people work in and even the cultures that entrepreneurs create, they don't foster any of those things. So there's a disconnect.
And maybe this goes to my next question. The other thing that you speak about is avoiding the energy highs and lows. And maybe that's part of kind of what you were just saying. We were talking about working smarter, not harder, but it sounds like they kind of go together and I wanted to ask you more about that because I think that's something that a lot of us, particularly who are kind of trying to drive change within our companies or, you know, in our industries, we really suffer from being really high and really low and having a hard time managing our energy.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think about it, I always say, I use the car analogy. You know, the more, if you're at a light and you have to accelerate, you're going to burn a lot more gasoline in that short cycle than you would when you're just cruising. So if you think about it, those peaks, you're burning a lot of your own energy, which is the gasoline. And then when you're coasting, you don't have that same burn. So ultimately, if you could manage your energy, much like I said before, managing the clock, a lot of it has to do with managing your own energy. So if you could identify, I always say that too, there's these trip wires that we all have that we trip over. And those are the things or people or activities that drain most of our energy. We have to learn how to deal with and how to handle those trip wires. Now, versus you have to identify them. Once you identify them, you could go around them, you could delegate them, or you can eliminate them, or you could just do whatever has to get done. So that right there is an energy conservation method. But ultimately, like I said, you got to be grounded, you got to be very focused, and you have to be very in the moment as an athlete, because there's so much gut and so much instinct that you have to have in order for your talent to actually go to work and actually take over for you. So if you're constantly going up and you're going down, it's you're excited adrenaline burst, boom, and then you crash. You're losing. When you average it out, you have low energy because of those spikes. And oftentimes the higher the spike, you know, the lower the drop. So we got to manage all of that. And if we can do it, we have a really good chance of winning. And with a lot of the executives that I work with, I relate it to them like this. Most people, they are either, it's like they're being chased by a lion most of the day.
Right.
And ultimately, you have to tame that lion. And if you don't, you're going to run out of energy probably before that lion
definitely
takes a bite out of you. So you gotta realize that. You gotta break that cycle, and that's why it's really dangerous as a leader, as a business owner, entrepreneur, and even an athlete, if you're driven by two things: fear and not failing. So if you're driven by fear or not failing, you can get yourself in some big trouble because you're never gonna stop. Those two things create obsessive behaviors.
Right. So how do I flip that? So if I'm constantly being chased by the lion, at least that's how I act, what's one thing I can do to slow my roll a little bit and get into a more balanced place? Because you're not saying stop, and you're not saying be like blasé. You're just saying manage it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely not saying, you know, just drink herbal teas and medicate all day. You know, there's a time and a place for everything. And that's when we think about this, right? What we have to do is you got to find out what the driver is. Like, what are you actually chasing, or what are you actually running from? So if you can figure that out, right? You know, what am I chasing and what am I running from? If I could figure that out, now I'm a little bit more intelligent on my own process. And that's where I think a lot of people go wrong. The first thing I do when I work with people is, how do you define winning? Most people, they cannot define what winning means to them. They may actually be winning right now, but they can't see it because they're so conditioned to run that walking is just not even an option for them. So you got to figure that out. You know, what are you chasing? What are you running from? What does winning mean to you? And ultimately, here's a question that most people don't ask. What does losing mean to you? And what's the worst thing that could happen? If you were to lose, what's the worst thing that could happen? And there's two things that people say. It's losing all of my money and death. And the chances of, you know, you're definitely going to die. That's a guarantee, okay? So we can just, that should disappear. And then the running out of money, that's when you got to kind of trust what it is that you do and who it is that you are, and what your actual gifts are and what your talents are. And when you could align all of that, that's when you have your best chance of winning, but winning at your own pace. You do not have to have a lion chasing you, because the adrenal response that takes place from that fight or flight mechanism, that's what leaves you drained. That's what throws people into higher levels of stress. That's what induces panic. And if you think about it, what could you do when you're in a state of anxiety or a state of panic? You can't do anything really effectively. Your thoughts are clouded. You have fatigue. Your energy's gone. There's no way you can build that business or build anything.
So I, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about as you were talking is that I think oftentimes we in the workplace are in our fight or flight mode in a very subtle way, right? So we're not being chased by a lion or, you know, there isn't an earthquake, or, you know, we're not being threatened in some way, like the kind of the obvious things. But don't you think that, or in your experience, have you seen that we accidentally get into this fight or flight because we're stressed? We're so stressed out all the time.
Yeah. And that brings me to this next point is, we're trying to do too much. And it's like, hey, if you were to really kind of dial, look at your business and what you do as a whole, everything should, again, distill down to very simple things. What's the one thing that you do every day or could do every day that moves your needle the most and gets you, again, closer to winning as defined by you? So you got to figure that out. You know, what's the one thing that moves the needle the most? That's where you should put most of your energy. When we all look at our businesses and we could study our P&L, we could see what our categories of revenue are. Well, usually when you look at that, it's going to tell you, hey, here's where I'm the most successful. And that's probably where you should be putting most of your energy. And most people, especially entrepreneurs, they get caught in the land of vision and they forget, like, hey, I have something good right here in front of me. I just need to continue to double down on that. What I found that most entrepreneurs are really bad at is process. They struggle with doing the same thing over and over and over again and just kind of polishing and getting that sword even sharper and sharper and sharper. It's easier for them to go pick up another sword somewhere else and say, you know, I kind of like the color of this one better and I want to go do this. And so we ultimately lose focus, and that puts us in some of these crazier states. But it always comes down to simplifying and trusting that being simple is a very good way of being. And A-Rod told me this one time, you know, he's one of my good friends and we were chatting, Alex Rodriguez, and he says, D, I want to tell you something. It's always better to go narrow and deep than go wide and shallow. And I have another client that owns sports teams, multi-billionaire, and he told me the riches are in the niches, so don't try to do everything. And these are very simple sayings that I always tell myself when I feel myself starting to stretch. And it's like, condense, think simple, think about what moves the needle.
Do you think that from your coaching perspective and both athletics and business, that part of our challenge, part of the reasons maybe we stretch ourselves so thin is we pick something that we consider winning, a goal that's so big and far out there that we don't really know how to get there or what to do. So we throw everything at the wall. Like, you know, like I'm thinking in sports, right? You don't go from, you know, day one of practice to the Super Bowl, right? You focus on getting better as a team. Then you focus on winning the next game and then the next game, right? And then you kind of work your way. And I think the same with business. We sometimes are like, all right, I'm going to launch a revenue stream for my company that makes $100 million, or I'm going to start a business, or I'm going to change the culture. Like, it's this big,
but to do.
Yeah, and it's just too big. Yeah. So then we get trapped in busy because we don't actually know what we're doing. We don't know what lane to, or niche to actually go into.
Yeah, totally. And you know, that comes down to you got to figure out what it is that I say. There's always something that we feel called to do within us. And you have to get to the point where you know what that is. You know, you ask a young kid, hey, what's your dream in life? What are you looking to do? It's amazing how many of them could articulate that. And as you ask them questions, they'll give you more details. Oftentimes when you talk to the adult, you know, entrepreneur, there's this level of like false conviction that I see where it's like, yeah, I want to do this and I do that and I do a little of this and a little bit of that. And again, it goes back to figuring out what is it that you feel most called to do. And you can't be everything. And that was something years ago that I had to tell myself, and it was through a lot of trials and errors, but it was, you can't be everything. Like, what is it that you love to do and what is it that you're great at? And talent oftentimes is tricky because what we're great at seems easy. And because we associate easy with not working or not enough, we don't even trust it. When ultimately our talent, you know, is that, you know, we all have different gifts. We all have different talents. Same thing on a baseball field. You know, you have players that could naturally hit home runs. You have players that could naturally hit singles and doubles. If the singles and doubles hitter tries to hit home runs, they're going to fail. And if the home run hitter tries to hit singles and doubles and steals bases, they're going to fail.
Right.
So you got to figure it out for yourself. What comes easy to you? What comes natural to you? And where do you feel like you're kind of sitting in that glove? And it's amazing when you get there and you trust it and you believe in it and you have the confidence, you're going to be less prone to want to do everything and feel the need to do everything.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying, what are you really good at? Like, what contribution can you bring to this world in your work, in your life, whatever it is? And then how do you work hard in optimizing or like knocking that out of the park? It's not just a like, oh, this is easy. It's what am I good at?
Right. And I'll give you an example. I was just speaking in San Diego this past weekend, and I met a guy who's been a doc for a long time. It was, you know, it was for Johnson & Johnson, and it was a part of their vision workshop. And one of the guys was an ophthalmologist. And he's like, you know, my mother always wanted me to be a doctor. So I became a doctor. And I'm 60 years old and I hate being a doctor. He says, I've been dying for years to relaunch the 2.0 version of myself, which is what I actually want to do. And this gentleman hates being a doctor. Everything he said, everything about his aura was, I hate being a doctor. But he kept doing it. And ultimately, that was somebody that was going against what it is that they felt called to do and what they wanted to do. And there's a lot of things in life that don't make sense when you see people, wow, I can't believe that guy achieved so much in that niche field, you know, selling X, Y, or Z. But it's amazing how we can monetize anything and make a business successful when our heart is in it and when our head is in it and when we're all about it and the impact and the mission and the vision. When it's all aligned, we have a great chance for success. But we have a lot of people, I say, they're out of position. They're doing things they feel they should do or have to do, but don't want to do. Very dangerous place to be.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us are walking through the world like that in a little bit of a zombie state of like, I'm not even sure how I got here, but I'm here. Yeah. So I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm too deep in this thing to quit. I have too much brand equity in this thing that I hate doing. Let me continue. It makes when you break it down like that, it makes a lot of sense, right? It
makes perfect sense.
You know? I think, again, people are afraid to take the leap at times just for reasons that I always say it comes down to trust, it comes down to confidence, and it comes down to belief. If you don't have trust, confidence, or belief, most importantly in yourself, it's anything you do is going to be difficult. You're going to typically play the conservative hand.
Well, and I think the beauty of what you're saying, I think for all of us innovators out there is it doesn't mean that you have to be a high profile athlete or an entrepreneur, you know, to love what you do. It's also kind of a matter of finding those pieces of your work and life that you love. So like, I know a couple of project managers that to me would be like, put a fork in my eye, not my idea of a good time. They love their work, but they love specific things about it. And they figured out what it is that really makes them tick. And they make sure to focus on that because all of us have stuff in our work, in our life, regardless of what we do that we don't like. That's part of the, like, it's part, like, I don't like taking out the trash at home, but I have to do it. Otherwise my house will stink. So like we all have stuff we don't like, but if we can find the things that really drive us and to your point are naturally kind of how we add value to the world, we can find that sense of accomplishment in our jobs. It doesn't have to be cool and high profile.
Yeah, well, 100%. And I also find that that's how great teams are built. Great teams are built on, you know, the leader says, hey, I'm good at this, this, and this. This is what I love. Everything else, I need to figure out how to put a better player in that position. So, you know, personally, I hate operations. It's not something I enjoy. So whatever I do, I have to know that I have an operator to my right. I have to have someone that does my schedule to my left. And I need to build my team based on my own preferences as well as my own weaknesses. And if you do that, you'll be amazed that you'll actually love what you do a lot more. And there's so many people that are just buried. They actually do like what they do and they enjoy it. They're just not getting the most out of themselves and out of that career path and career passion because they're so caught up in all the other stuff that they don't like. And that's where the mind tends to focus on the things that we don't like rather than what we do like. And then the weeds take over the garden, as they say.
Well, to your point, we let all that noise and distraction and other people and things and life decide where we spend our time and what we like and what we don't like. And so that kind of leads me to my next question too. I want to ask you about chapter 12. I'm actually sitting here with a book open because I was like, I cannot forget to ask about this because the first chapter made me laugh in almost a little bit of that, you know, that like, oh no, that's really true laugh. Not the ha ha ha, that's funny laugh, but the ha ha, like, oh shit. Yeah. So chapter 12 is find the bully and knock him out. So I just want to read the first couple sentences so that the audience can get kind of a glimpse of what I want to talk about. So it says, have you ever been intimidated by a situation because of your expectations of how things will go? And I love that word expectations in there. I mean, you are sweating over something that might happen, but has not actually happened. There's a big chance it may not ever happen, but it can still happen. That's the first paragraph. I love that. Will you talk about that? Because I think there's kind of two levels of the questions I want to ask. So I'm just going to ask them at the same time because I think the answers flow together. One is like, oh my God, what does spending so much time in anticipation and expectation do to us? And two is, how do we overcome that hurdle to knock the bully out? Because wow, I mean, you really hit it, I think, with that chapter on a real challenge that we all face of this, like, this spiraling that we get. I mean, the loudest voice is one in our heads, and we let it take over us.
Yeah. So first, this chapter was inspired by a good friend of mine that lives here in New York. He's a big private equity guy with Guggenheim. And one day, I mean, he's from Argentina originally, and he was telling me kind of about his backstory and his life. You know, whenever I see somebody that's achieved things, not just in business and financially, but also in the family space, I admire that. So I said, you know, Pablo, can you tell me about your life? And he said, you know, when I was a kid, I used to move from school to school. And the first thing I would always do is find the bully, and I'd punch him square in the face.
Someone had told me that. I moved every 4 years. I never did that.
Yeah.
Darn
this
it.
Is this is kind of how he established, you know, territory. And he said, it's amazing you do that.
Prison rules.
Yeah, right away. The guy knows, hey, not to mess with you, and people start to actually look up to you. And I said, well, it's a great story, but what is the bully symbolic of, and what can we make the bully symbolic of? And the bully is really symbolic of fear. And if we could punch the bully and knock the fear out, we could actually then allow our natural self, our natural tendencies, our natural cadence and talents to take over. And I said, Dana, when you work with all these different people and all these different lines of work and all these different spaces, what's the common theme amongst all of them? Stress, anxiety, fear, and anticipating things that probably won't happen, and worrying, which is all really connected to why we have stress and why we have fear. And, you know, I was looking at a statistic that said 95% of the things that people worry about never actually happen. The 5% that does happen doesn't happen in the way in which we envision or worry about anyway. So therefore, it's a formula that basically says, stop worrying, because nothing you're worrying about is real and actual and actually will happen. So worry is negative. And in sports, business, life, you have to play with a positive head, or else the chances of you not succeeding go way up. So that's really what the chapter, you know, is about. It's about you overcoming yourself by facing things in real time, and not thinking about the past and letting the past become the future, and not letting the future events that have not happened become what you are focusing on, because then you miss what I talked about earlier. You miss the present, and you miss grounding yourself out. And like I said, to be a great athlete, to be a great performer, you must be present. And when you talk to athletes that have great moments, and you talk to performers that have great moments, they can't even recall the moment because they're so deep in it. They recall the feelings of the moment. And it's an amazing thing.
So you've spent a lot of time, obviously, in kind of when you're coaching New York Yankees in the, is it the bullpen? I'm horrible with all that lingo, so bear with me. But you know, like the pregame. Dugout. Thank you. Dugout. Yeah. I was close. So not even close, actually. Totally far off.
Same field.
Yeah, in the dugout. You know, before the game, like that's when the moment happens, right? And it seems like when you get into worry anticipation, right? What if I play well? What if I totally bust? What if I miss the ball? What if I, right? Like all those things happen. What's your advice to people to get, first of all, out of that mindset? And I guess my second question to layer onto that is, for me anyway, taking action gets me out of worry. So like the minute I step onto the field, I'm done worrying. So I need to get out on the field fast in whatever I'm doing. And sometimes that's having a conversation with someone. Sometimes that's just writing down my worries so I can kind of get rid of them. Sometimes it's actually sending that email or calling that client or whatever. I'd love to get your advice for one, how do you get out of that loop if you're in the dugout, you're in that moment, like that pre-moment, and two, how powerful is action in all this?
Yeah, well, you know, action wins. That's what I always say. Action wins. You overcome anything in your life, good or bad, with action. So that right there You want to change your day. You want to change your results. Take action. And so that's its own thing. And this other drill I do with players and I do with folks that I work with is it's called staying above the horizon line. So picture this line right in front of you. It's a horizon. You know, above the line is all the things that you can do, you're going to do. It's positive. It's the sun's out. Below the line is all those demonous thoughts that we have. It's the fear. It's the hesitation. It's the what ifs. I don't know. I'm not sure. And it's dark and gloomy. Where do you want to be, right? So ultimately, when you feel those thoughts creep into your mind of doubt and insecurity, because they're going to happen no matter how great you become at the psychological game and the warfare, it's going to be there. It's a natural human response. So don't think if you have those response, you're failing or you're falling behind or you're not doing this right. It's natural. But ultimately, it's your job to be present enough in the moment enough to recognize that pattern of thought and make it last for a very short period of time. And you do that by, like you said, taking action. And number two, keeping your thoughts focused on where it is that you are going and staying above that horizon line. So it's a visual that I create for people because that they're naturally going to want to drip below the line and focus on the things that can suffocate them and pull them into depression and anxiety and stress and all that. And you just can't perform when you're below the line.
Yeah. And I have to loop it back to what you said earlier. I would imagine that it's much easier to get yourself back up over that line. Also when you know where you're headed and you're working smarter and you've got a lane versus exactly. When you're all over the place.
100%. And most entrepreneurs are visionary people, which means they have vision. So I always teach entrepreneurs and business folks, look at your life through pictures and create visuals to help you overcome circumstances. So if you're feeling a certain way and that's a negative way, create the picture of the positive way. Like what's the opposite of that picture, right? So if you're fearful, the opposite we'll say a fearful would be confident. So create a vision in your head of what confident looks like. It should be you. But if it's not, you know, come up with that superhero or that person that you view as confident, and you could use that to cue you out of that negative moment. But so visionary people need to use visuals in order to oftentimes overcome. That's why, you know, it's not that psychotherapy is a bad thing. At times it works, but I find a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with it because they're so visual that they need pictures to help them overcome things and to see the opposite of what they are. Because they have a visual of themselves in the negative state. They need an opposing picture to see themselves in a positive state. And that goes for really everything we talked about today. So when you talk about simplifying and what your lane looks like, define your lane through pictures. It doesn't always have to be like words or writing it down. Like it could be, what are the pictures that symbolize success, happiness, wealth, you know what I mean? For you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. And I think, you know, what we're just talking about for all of us innovators on Launch Street is all of that stuff, I think, Dana, that you're talking about really is what hinders your ability to change with the times and to innovate as well. That worry, that being busy, working hard and not working smart, that kind of being too much on the highs and lows. I think all of that is what keeps us trapped in doing things like we did yesterday and then ending up behind. And if we got out of that, I think we'd be able to manage our lives and our careers much better.
Totally. And if you're an innovator, see yourself as such and realize what, you know, think of all the great innovators of that have been a part of our present and our past. Those innovators had a lot of failures on their way to innovation. They had a lot of people that didn't understand what they were doing. I mean, I wrote in the book, if you think about, you know, Elon Musk telling you about his, you know, SpaceX program or telling you about a car that's going to run like Tesla or Steve Jobs, like these are things that people at the time, they couldn't understand, but these people were so focused on the imagery that they made it happen.
Yeah, and you're right. You're absolutely right. And they knew their lanes. It's interesting about that. I have to think more about that because I do sometimes accidentally get into the jack of all trades because there's so much to do. But that doesn't mean I'm doing it well, it turns out.
yeah, what are you great at? Double down on what you're great at. And again, it may not be palatable for everybody at first, but you're going to find your tribe and you're going to find the people that are attracted to what it is that you do. It's amazing how they find you when you're doing what you're supposed to do.
First of all, where can people go to learn more and connect with you and buy the book?
Yeah. So simple. The book's on Amazon, and then they can connect with me on my website, danacavalia.com. I do a daily blog that's real motivation, inspiration, and encouragement for, you know, high performers. And that's where you can find me. So danacavalia.com. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and all that, but you could locate it all through there.
Awesome. We'll put the links in the show notes too. Awesome. So my last question for you is, I was going to ask you, what's the first step we should take to becoming champions? But I want to ask it a little bit differently, which is, of all the habits, what's the one habit that really rises to the top is like, you need to start here and get this right to do all of them?
That's a good question. But again, staying with the simple theme, if you could look at everything that you do, figure out what that one thing is. If you only could do one thing that moves your needle, you may already be doing it and you probably already are. What is that one thing? Double down on that one thing, and you're gonna simplify your whole life because of that.
And by double down, do you mean do more of it, do it consistently?
I'm more of a proponent of consistency more so than more, because it's like success compounds and activity compounds. It's like, you know, your money in the market over time, not so much in what you did today, but it's, I have found that so many people have a hard time checking that same box Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, yeah. Friday. And when I coach people, it's really getting them to, can you check that box Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week, do it again next week, do it again the week after, and you'll be amazed at how many people cannot stick to the process. And that could be a winning process, and they won't even know it's a winning process because they can't be consistent with it at that super, super high level. And the best of the best, that is what they do better than anybody else. It's not more work. They are just more consistent in the work.
And in doing to your point earlier, in doing the right things.
Doing the right things. They've identified the right things and they double down with the consistency of it. Very simple.
Oh my gosh, that's great. That is great advice to end us on. Daniel, thank you so much for joining me today. That was great. I need to go work on my consistency, I've decided.
We all do, right?
Yeah.
The mind is an amazing place. I think Dana gave us some real insights into what it takes to be a champion in our everyday work and life. We don't have to be an athlete to do this at all. So good. Now, go put what you learned into action. And hey, give us those 5 stars in that review on iTunes or whatever you listen to. So appreciate it. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.